Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
We are now four games into the NBA playoffs, and if we are to believe that the series doesn't start until someone wins on the road, then we are right where we began, which makes sense because it's all coming back to the same question we wanted to ask at the beginning of this series. It's Jhené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Trevor Scales, filling in for Jhené Egbuamoke today. You normally see him co-hosting Sports Nation on ESPN Plus, wherever, I guess it's not wherever you get your ESPN Plus.
Right.
You get it on ESPN
wherever
Plus.
Wherever you stream ESPN Plus,
I guess that's
right?
True. Yeah, it worked kind of the same as the podcast.
Absolutely.
All right, so I'm not super far off with that one.
Multi-platform with it. No, you're safe. You could go that route if you really needed to. Absolutely.
There we go. All right, so we can go that route. We got a lot of different routes to go today here. We have news out of college sports that reminds us just how petty and dumb some people can be in the things that they choose to get mad about here. We've got a lot to get to. We got conversation that was had with Cam Newton on the morning show earlier today that has some interesting sound about what lies ahead for one of the defining quarterbacks of the last decade or so. But Trev, we got to start with the one question we are asking at the very beginning of the finals, because we're now four games in, the series is now knotted to a piece, and the Bucks held serve at home, and it feels like we're right back to the spot where we're asking how much are we going to blame Chris Paul for things when they happen. Because after last night, where again, this game, the Milwaukee Bucks win a close one. This wasn't the 20-point blowout from Game 3. This was down the stretch where Chris Paul had two turnovers in clutch time. So the final 5 minutes with the score within 5 points, that led directly to two Bucks layups. He looked out of sorts there in the end. He looks, in some people's estimation, maybe not 100% injury-wise. So, Trev, how much are we willing to put on the plate of Chris Paul as this series now heads back to Phoenix tied?
It's going to be a lot on him, right? Like, especially with the performance that you said, and not to mention, this is like more of a larger picture thing. He's got 15 turnovers over the last three games. Like, he hasn't had that sort of stretch in a postseason since 2012, his first year with the Clippers. So that is going to be emblematic of a reason of why we are going to point at Chris Paul. And then it doesn't help that we always assign a certain amount of blame to the wily vet that we gave a lot of the credit to as far as the Suns making this run. So it's going to be that double-edged sword of when we are going to be willing to give you all kinds of credit for steering this ship. If it goes left, you are going to be the fall guy above all else, because you were the one who was supposed to have all the experience, all the savvy, all the composure that you spread out to your teammates. Whereas Devin Booker was clearly ready to bounce back, and Chris just hasn't really shown up to the magnitude that we had seen him to the tail end of the Western Conference Finals.
You're right. This falls into what we do to starting quarterback territory,
right,
where it's all of the credit, all of the blame in spots that may not be totally fair. But I'll give Chris the credit here, because it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Chris Paul did a lot of what we've seen. We talked about yesterday on the show the leadership that him and Monty Williams have showed, the head coach and the star of this team respectively here. And Chris Paul made no bones about it. He said 17 turnovers in this game. That starts and ends with him.
It was me. I had five of them. You know what I mean? It was bad decision making. Timely, we down two, and I try to cross over right there, slip, turn it over. Had some bad passes in the first half. You know what I mean? They got, you know, a significant amount more shots than us. And so, you know, for me, I got to take care of the ball. We got 17 turnovers. We shoot the ball too well not to have those opportunities to score.
And Trev, I heard Monty Williams say it in the locker room on the broadcast to the team after. We got 17 turnovers. They have X amount of offensive rebounds.
19? Yeah, 19 points off of the turnovers, and then I think it was like 17-19 in the offensive boards too. Yep.
It's just things that can't happen here, and it's become so interesting matchup-wise to look at this, the size of Milwaukee ending up overwhelming Giannis' sheer force of will in the middle there. But when it comes right down to it, you're right. We gave Chris Paul so much credit for coming over and steadying the ship now, and it's not even that we're looking to blame him. I'm sure there's some people that are, because that's how people want to live. But I look at him and go, all right, this isn't the guy that got us to that point, right? Like, he looks out of sorts. Something's wrong with him. And if this is the Chris Paul, if this is the trend we're going to see, because it's been a downward trend through the first four games of this series now, they're not going to win. Like, I picked the Suns in seven in this series, but if this version of Chris Paul shows up, there's no amount of Devin Booker putting the team on his back that can overcome that.
That last bit is exactly what I was getting ready to touch on, because we've seen how this movie ends with Devin Booker balling out of control. Like, that is something that you could count on when the Suns came to the Ball Arena. Like, it was going to be a Devin Booker bucket performance. That was something you could always guarantee, but what Chris Paul was supposed to be was a steadier of sorts. He was supposed to be able to facilitate, take the load off of his shoulders. So when he's capable, he being Devin Booker, of taking on the offensive juggernaut role that he needs to sometimes, Chris has got to be better on that end to sort of facilitate the offense around him. Look, not getting any fast break points as a Suns team, that is also on Chris Paul's
shoulders. And
that's
the pace conversation that came up in the last series in the Western Conference Finals for this team when Chris Paul was on the floor. It was, all right, he had missed the first couple of games in the COVID protocol. He came back, and immediately that's where we went.
Yeah, and that is, again, to his credit, and he has owned up to the idea of him being the one that has to get this done. But it is, again, indicative of how much he has to do with this offense and why we assign so much credit and now so much blame in their success or failures, respectively.
As we try and look for reasons in all this, Monty Williams, their head coach, was asked after the game, is Chris Paul healthy? Here's what he had to say.
He's fine. Great players have games like that. We expect him to bounce back. He had five, but we had 17, and they scored 24 points. You know what I mean? That was pretty much the game right there. And then you double that up with the offensive rebounding. So it wasn't just Chris. As a team tonight, we got to take better care of the ball.
Chenangle Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Monty Williams is going to be one of those bunker guys. He's not going to let whatever their business is out there. He knows how to handle this team. But when I look at Chris Paul and why this to me has such a damaging effect, because we talk all the time about the home and road splits, especially relative to the ancillary players here, the role players on each of these teams here. And Trev, I don't know about you, like my place on the team was always as a role player. And the one thing that I always remember was you take strength from the sure things. In this team, Devin Booker and Chris Paul are supposed to be the sure things. And I'd say really more so Chris Paul. Like, Devin Booker is the more potent talent. He is the superstar on this team. But we've seen the game threes pop up for him all postseason this year. What you're supposed to count on, especially as a young team who has said, you've heard them all say, we take our cues from Chris, from Monty, from Jay, because we know he's been on this stage before, and they have eaten up everything these guys have given them. And it's kind of like watching your dad go out and get beat up somewhere. Like, there's a part of you that mentally cannot recover from that when all of a sudden now it's your time, because it's like, all right, if I can't count on him to handle business, why the hell is anyone supposed to count on me, especially when you're on the road?
Look, Phoenix better hope that it damn sure isn't a dynamic. They just saw their dad get their ass whooping. Like, they can't, they ain't gonna bounce back. They gonna go back to the crib and be like, Ma, I don't know what to do. We ain't got nothing for you.
You don't make eye contact at dinner after that for a while. It's just like, to be clear, but I'm not throwing dad under the bus. I've never seen my dad get his ass whooped anywhere.
Same here.
We're not, this isn't a personal thing about our dads. It's just the idea of having to watch your dad get beat up there. And I have to imagine that's just you eat dinner in silence.
Dangerous territory, because like you don't want to crack no jokes, but you got all the jokes in the world, but then you also fear for your own life. It's just terrible in so many different
ways. Nobody wins in that spot.
Nobody wins.
And that's where the Phoenix Suns find themselves right now. Now, we can have a different conversation about where this series goes from here now, because we've talked all along about what are you willing to bet on as far as the consistency of these performances. We all saw this Devin Booker bounce back performance coming. What we may not have seen coming, and what I don't think DeAndre Ayton saw coming, was the block heard around the world last night. So coming up next year, did Giannis cement his legacy already before they even win a finals with the block that we saw on DeAndre Ayton? We'll get to that next here on ESPN Radio. That is Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $700 on average. Call or click today and find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Trevor Scales, and we've got to have the conversation about Giannis Antetokounmpo's block. We've got to do this here, but we are obligated to. Yes, I said we are the worldwide leader in blocks today. We have got a comprehensive list of some of the best blocks you have ever seen. I promise you, we have worked painstakingly on this list, but I know we had this very much like what turned into a Two Americas discussion on lotion on this show not too long ago, and Trevor Scales was not with us here. Trevor in the break as we are talking here. And it's nice, you know, we're getting people back in the building here at work. It's nice to see everybody we know. And we've got a very, you know, diverse group of people
Absolutely.
Here having this discussion
Absolutely.
About the kind of lotion you use in the shower. And I realized that we stumbled upon something else here as we were talking about moisturizing skin. Everyone's skincare routines was the advent of the 2-in-1, sometimes 3-in-1 body lotion, shampoo, conditioner. And I had no idea. Well, actually, that's a lie. I had some idea just how firmly down racial lines this thing went. Like,
yes.
Trev, you were disgusted at the notion of the 3-in-1. And you've been in locker rooms and seen plenty of
Absolutely.
This.
There's no question. But, like, it is a cardinal sin for you to use anything that is good enough to clean out your hair to use it then on your skin. Katie Hennessy, who's in with us, has said it, and you quoted it in the break. You only have one skin. The fact that you are using anything that is harsh enough to strip anything from your hair, and then that is supposed to then re-moisturize it, which I don't believe to begin with, and then use that on your body. Cardinal sin. How do you go about life doing
that? I'm just saying this is very much like a college thing. Like, this feels like a coming-of-age thing
sure.
where you're trying to ball on a budget here.
Sure.
It's giving you 3 for the price of 1. That feels like a deal, so it's hard to turn away from that.
It feels
it's
like
efficient.
A deal. Yes, efficiency, but at what cost, Mike? At what cost?
Well, I mean, listen, it is there to clean your hair, so in theory, it could do the same for your body.
No, but then you got the dry scalp, you walking around, and just snowflakes falling every time you have an itch in your head, and I'm sure you have plenty of them after you use body
Does it stripping. Look like his hair like, itches?
Like,
I mean, listen, this might be Touché. The advertisement for why not to use that stuff here, as I went bald at 28, so.
There's a counterpoint right there.
It was someone in the room said it here, and it is very true. It is very much like a quarterback. If you've got 3, you probably
you
don't have
got one.
So now that we've established that here, at Mike Golic Jr. on Twitter, because I'm sure I'm going to hear plenty about this again. The lotion thing went over like crazy. At Trevor Scales.
Yep.
About where you're at with the multi-in-one body wash, hair, shampoo, etc. We'll get to that, but Trev, this Giannis Antetokounmpo block in the final minute of this game here. What Giannis pulled off, by the way, in this moment, for anyone that missed it here, Giannis Antetokounmpo in the waning minutes of this game manages to go out, guard Devin Booker, see a lob go over his head, turn around, and like a defensive back that got beat on a double move, sprint to the point and block DeAndre Ayton's alley-oop attempt at the rim. He's the only player to block a dunk attempt in clutch time in a finals game in the last 25 years. Trev, is this now the defining moment for Giannis's career? Like, do we have the highlight reel moment for him no matter what happens, or is this contingent on a finals win
I was getting ready to say yes with a caveat, right? Mm. It's the idea of them winning the series after this. It's like storming back, Bucks in 6. I'll give you Bucks in 7 even. So long as Milwaukee is hanging the banner at the end of this series, yeah, that's your defining moment. That's his defining moment going forward in his career. That'll be the moment that we all point to and say, that's the moment Giannis became the unflappable superstar that we can no longer critique off the basis of point X, right? Like, that'll take one thing away that we can critique him on as far as the many things that people find ways to critique Giannis on to this point. I am just, it does get exhausting, the idea of trying to immediately compare it to the one thing that we recognize that had a similar moment in sports, but it was one of those things that you felt, you knew that was very important. You knew that that was a big deal the moment it happened.
You're talking about comparing it to the LeBron
yes.
James block against
yes.
the Golden State Warriors,
block
and what I believe
James.
Was game 7 of that series. So
yep.
a little bit different in the gravity of those moments here, but it's still the NBA Finals. It's still relative to the moment of that game. Again, what was going on there? We said that circumstance, the first and only time in the last 25 seasons someone's blocked a dunk attempt in that kind of time frame. It is insane and worthwhile. It is certainly not the best block, I think, that we've ever seen. That LeBron James block is certainly a cut above that,
yes.
but I'm with you now. We've got the thing that if they win and the Bucks win, I always remember as a kid when college football teams would win the national championships, you'd wake up the next day and you would see the advertisements for the DVD video set with the Sports Illustrated cover
yep.
and all that
yep.
stuff here. This would be the thing that scrolls along in the background while the music plays and they talk about the Milwaukee Bucks are your 2021 NBA champions.
It's the one thing that when you woke up and watched SportsCenter as they were airing the parade on the next day, that would be part of that end bump that they would have, that montage that they would have. It would be the first thing you saw. That would be the first call that you would hear from Mike Breen. It's just, It was that kind of moment, and you felt that immediately.
And you know who it sucks for more than anything?
Who that?
Chris Middleton.
Oh. Because he dropped 40.
I don't know if you guys know this or not. The Bucks are now 5-0 this postseason when Chris Middleton scores over 30. Like, there's some correlation here when this dude goes out and balls. We've talked about him being the closer, but think about this. Giannis has been so otherworldly. This series all leading up to this point that we have forgotten that whole Batman-Robin thing that we were doing with Perk not too long ago.
It's so fascinating to kind of get into like the roles and what they correlate with, especially between those two, because I struggle with the correlation versus causation thing here with Chris Middleton. Like, is it a direct function of him scoring that they are winning, or is it just the fact that it may just click in wins for him? Because it's not as though the fantastic performances from Chris Middleton are existing in a vacuum when the Bucks win. There are other things occurring within that space, like the five-plus turnovers from Chris Paul, the myriad of things that went wrong for DeAndre Ayton in different points of the game. There is some argument to be made that, like, look, Chris Middleton certainly is there when they win, but is it a... is it a cause-effect thing from Chris Middleton's buckets that they're ended up getting these wins?
I can tell you what I think it is, and I think it's the same for both of these teams. I think they're mirrors of each other in this one way, and this is probably true for a lot of teams, but with the types they've got here, when you look at each of these teams, I would say for the most part, now last night might be the exception to this, but I would say for the most part, each team's got a guy who sets the floor. Giannis sets the floor for the Bucks. Chris Paul sets the floor for the Phoenix Suns. The ceiling is set by Devin Booker, the ceiling is set by Chris Middleton as far as when these teams can accomplish at the level that we would like to. I think that's fair for both. Now, the question about the block was a big one. The question about Giannis and his first couple minutes of the game was arguably even bigger. We'd all been kind of confused for the last few games, watching Giannis go out for like the first 2 or 3 minutes and then immediately have to go to the bench. And so shout out to journalism for asking the right questions after the game here and getting us the answer that we needed to make sure we knew what the hell was up with Giannis.
Giannis, this was the second game in a row he went out early in the first quarter. I'm just curious what was going on there.
I wanted to, what the hell you guys say politely? I wanted to take a tinkle. A tinkle? Yeah. I wanted to take a tinkle. It came back. Yeah. That's polite, right? Tinkle is polite, yeah. Both games. I wanted to take a tinkle to win back.
And now, I appreciate Giannis taking the bathroom break. I'm a known pants peer myself, so this was something.
Wait,
that,
hold on, time out.
Yeah.
I mean, we just going to stop down there.
I mean, it's a thing. Like, when I was playing, I don't pee my pants now during the body of the show.
Okay,
yeah,
that was the clarification.
That I should have probably clarified, yeah. I do not pee my pants yet.
Thank you.
During the show.
Good.
Yeah.
Another good qualification.
Peeing your pants is cool.
Is it?
Well, the thing that ticked me off about this was not that Giannis was missing game time to go pee. It was that the first person I thought of when he said tinkle was Jason Fitz. Jason Fitz, co-host of Spain and Fitz, who's around the show all the time, who says tinkle. Trev, I'm sure you've heard it ad nauseum the way anyone in Jason Fitz's general orbit has heard him say tinkle. So I'm really mad that Jason Fitz is now calling himself the Giannis Antetokounmpo of ESPN Radio.
Oh, Jesus. He had to go there, didn't he? Right. Oh, the other part that I enjoyed about the sound clip there was Giannis, once he recognized that everybody found that hilarious, it was like a childlike sort of leaning into the word tinkle. I'm just going to repeat it.
Oh, yeah.
As many times as I can.
He knew what he was doing. That guy's a pro's pro when it comes to the tinkle stuff out there. All right. 888-729-3776. 888-SAY-ESPN if you want to get a hold of us. Coming up next, we'll give you the latest on the situation surrounding Richard Sherman in this NFL offseason. We'll do that after this word from Indeed. Now, the reasons to find your next hire with Indeed are really starting to add up. Just look at the numbers. Instant Match searches millions of resumes in Indeed's database to deliver candidates whose resumes fit your job description. They've got 135 skills tests that are going to go beyond just the resume to help you find the right candidates even faster. And, according to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all the other job sites combined. So if you want to multiply your employees and subtract the hassles of finding them, visit Indeed.com/credit. Back after this, Janae Golick Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Janae Golick Jr., the podcast.
Janae Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Coming up next, Big 12, what the hell are you doing? That's all I'm going to say about it right now, because I'm getting sick of the way that we legislate penalties and taunting and all these things about sports in general that can be fun if you treat them the right way, unless you want to act like you're like just completely going to come in and be narcs in this
situation. Yeah, right. Like, mark behavior indeed. Like, just moral authority behavior. Like, there's no reason to inject all of that into these sports. Like, bring it back. Well, just a little bit.
We're gonna try and reel things in here. We're brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Mike Golic Jr. here. Trevor Scales filling in for Chinay Agwumike today. And, Trev, we talked about this yesterday in reporting what had happened here. Richard Sherman, who we now have seen and heard, according to information that's come out, an audio recording of a 911 call made by who is believed to be his wife, Ashley Moss, that was obtained by ABC News and ESPN, that Richard Sherman was reportedly intoxicated and threatened to kill himself during a confrontation with family members before he was arrested early Wednesday in a Seattle suburb. Again, he was arrested facing several charges after he crashed an SUV into a construction zone, tried to break into his in-laws' home, and then fought with officers who used a police dog to apprehend him. He was booked Wednesday morning. And so there are all the specifics of that, Trevor. Now, I know as far as the 911 audio that was released, and we can debate the morality of that being released and something that people get to hear in its own way, but you have not listened to it, correct?
Yeah, I've avoided that. It is one of those triggering trauma sort of history things that I've chosen to avoid and just gone with reading what's available as far as excerpts from said call. Because from everything that I've read, it sounds like an incredibly chaotic situation that is trying to be reasoned out. I cannot speak to the dispatcher, him or herself, speaking the way that he or she did to Ashley Moss. But the circumstances themselves are absolutely insane to read about, to see, to hear, and I cannot imagine what sort of duress everyone was in under that.
Yeah, it was sad. Like, top to bottom, it was all sad, and you're right, there was a lot of conversation about the way in which the 911 dispatcher dealt with who was supposedly Ashley Moss in this situation. And again, that's one of those spots where I don't know what that person is trained to do.
Correct.
I can't pass judgment with any amount of knowledge. What I can say is it made me uncomfortable because it did not sound like someone who was calling for help in this situation was given the amount of empathy that would make you want to call for help to these people, that would make you expect to be helped in this spot. And so as we try and keep this all straight, so much of this right now is in the waiting for information phase, as we try and wait for the legal process to go out here with Richard Sherman and find out more information about this, as we hear more from his wife, who said, you know, no one was harmed in here, and really came out after the fact and used her words to try and diffuse the situation as much as possible. The one thing that I continue to be struck by anytime this stuff comes up is the irresponsible way people bring up CTE in all of this. Anytime there is an instance like this with someone who plays football, with someone who spent time playing football or a long time of it, because so many people, when we went through everything with the movie and the initial findings with that and all the ways that that entered into our consciousness and the way we talk about this sport, in a lot of ways, very right, acknowledging that this is a factor, acknowledging that head trauma can have serious consequences here. What it's become for a lot of people is a crutch, is a catch-all in situations where they see a former athlete or a current athlete under duress and just assume this is what must be causing it. I think it's unfair to the person's situation. I think it is reductive in the way that we talk about all this stuff. And I think, quite honestly, it's also dangerous to other athletes that are around there who everyone comes from a different background. Everyone's got different things in their life, different traumas, different things that have brought them to situations. So much we don't see behind the scene that to attribute it to that just creates kind of a panic amongst anyone who's put on a helmet. And I'm sure you felt it at certain times. Lord knows at the height of this I did, but that part to me always feels wholly irresponsible. And that's something that I've seen far too many people joke about. Seriously, however you want it, it's not the way.
Right. The oversimplification of all of this is where it gets to be incredibly dangerous, right? Like, even the lack of the hesitance to rush to judgment, which is absolutely necessary in every one of these stories that comes out like this, there's always like a tough set of individuals that argue that same exact stance in bad faith. But there is
the idea of needing to wait for more information.
Right.
Yeah, totally understand. That's always a tricky line.
Correct, right? Like, you never really like your allies sometimes when you end up voicing that opinion. But in this instance, it is paramount, right, for so many different reasons. To your point, right, when it comes to the 911 dispatcher, that tone of voice that was taken apparently with Ashley Moss, when it comes to Richard himself, what we are rushing to judge about his situation, and even the idea of domestic violence being a part of the headlines that end up getting rolled out, because that was a sort of justification for what went down and where it went down. When people assume certain things, and as the story rolls out, as Ashley comes out and says and clarifies, that is what the need to not rush to judgment is based upon. Like, you have to wait for these things to come out in order to have a nuanced and necessary discussion about each one of these factors, each facet of this story. Because, yeah, it was terrifying when you hear the details of Richard Sherman coming out and saying, I want to hang myself, according to the phone call. The idea of him being in such a bad place that he was considering taking his own life and threatening to take his own life, that's the sort of things that make people want to jump to the CTE relationship. But it's not fair by any stretch of the imagination until we have further details.
Yeah, I think it's dismissive of the specifics. And you're right, there's a lot of this that has been difficult to talk about it, because as we've gone through all of these different instances here, it's a reminder that there's no blanket way to describe all of these situations under one umbrella. Even what you brought up with domestic violence, the situations are all different, the specifics and details. I know when you talk about people arguing in bad faith in certain instances, I think a lot of what happened with the Seahawks offensive lineman and Chad Wheeler, the way we came out, because the details, again, were so different, so grisly in that situation. We had things to latch onto, more information immediately there, but people constantly want to compare one to the next in a way that usually bumps up against racial lines, in a way that people usually want to do, again, for reasons that have nothing to do with the actual victims or the people at the center of this involved. And that, to me, as we hopefully and unfortunately get better at discussing these things that we would rather not ever have to talk right about, but as we learn to discuss them with a little more empathy, the only thing I can keep coming back to is keeping the victim or victims at the center of the conversation here, operating from their perspective as best we can in this, especially if there are charges or crimes actually involved in all of this, and being very careful about the words we use. And that's why I'm always touchy about those three letters in CTE getting just thrown into these spots.
Yeah, and I think your point about focusing on the victim is paramount as well in how we discuss it, how the headlines get rolled out. Because again, because of the industry we're in,
yeah,
sports radio, like, we are going to talk about Richard Sherman in this, but it is also vitally important to know his wife's name, Ashley,
yes,
Moss, to refer to her by name, because it humanizes everyone in the situation. Whereas we tend to focus on humanizing just the person that we recognize on Sundays.
Yes.
There is a need to make sure that we humanize everyone involved, including the children, the father-in-law, the family-in-law in general. Like, everyone needs to be received and empathized with, to go back to something else you said.
Yeah, you talk about that. We tend to, especially when it's someone we see visually on Sundays, but also think we know. Like, we
right
all look at Richard Sherman, and we've been used to hearing him. He's someone who's been one of the smarter players around the league, offered opinions on a variety of subjects, and none of that should color what happens in this situation as we get information about it. Like, we've got to separate all that. I always say, because as much as we think we know the people involved in these situations, we don't, and so we have to operate with what we hear. So it's difficult. We'll keep you all abreast of information as we get it here, but the latest on Richard Sherman there as we await for some of the legal matters to resolve and go through the process that they have to here. We'll get back to the regular world of sports next here on ESPN Radio and everywhere on ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
And Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Trevor Scales with you guys. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And Trev, I don't know how to even begin to describe the just quiet rage that I felt earlier today. Because we can have a conversation about what's going on in college football. You and I both played college football, both love and cover it here at ESPN. And so when certain things come up, like we saw from the Big 12 yesterday, an announcement And I believe a comment made by the athletic director at Kansas State saying that the Pig 12 this year will not cancel or postpone games due to COVID-19 cases, that teams would be forced to forfeit if they had too many COVID-19 cases and not go on. I want to have a conversation about what that does to college football, how we're going to approach this fall, and now the second year having to deal with the COVID virus. But I cannot get past this. Saw this courtesy of Jason Kersey on Twitter, who is an Oklahoma football cover, covers the Oklahoma football for The Athletic, said Big 12 coordinator of officials Greg Burks said that if an opposing player does a horns down to a Texas player, that will probably be a penalty. But doing a horns down towards your own fans, quote, probably won't be a penalty. Although he left open the possibility that it could be. What the hell did I just read?
Buddy.
What are we doing here?
Buddy.
I wrote that exact same quote down. I had it ready to go because you are making this so much more difficult on yourself. Like, you are doing nothing but mucking up the waters that you are then going to have to wade through in order to try to legislate this BS rule. Like, ain't no way you're going to be able to figure out if that was towards the crowd or towards the player that was standing in front of the crowd.
That was like, the best part is the larger statement said they were going to leave it up to the officials to judge intent here. Yeah, because that's always worked well in sports.
Yeah. Let's make it a judgment call. That's always a good space to live in. Like, it is inevitably going to make people mad at you.
You know what we're going to try and do here? Legislate intent. Welcome to Big 12 football.
You're welcome.
I mean, colossally lame. I'm sorry, Trev. I always look at it, and I understand, sportsmanship is an inherently good thing.
Sure.
But it is something that we wholly misconstrue. Like, sportsmanship is making sure that you're not going after guys' knees from the side and behind, playing dirty like that one. It's shaking your opponent's hand after a game. It's doing all of those things, being a good ambassador for the game. Like, there are plenty of areas where sportsmanship is great. But my God, taunting your opponent is fun and cool.
Oh my God, it's great.
Like, smack talk is the part of the game that we all lionize in certain form until a certain section of the population does it, especially at a certain age, and all of a sudden, then we are clutching the hell out of our pearls.
It's the dangest thing, right? Like, because I'm here for all the bastardized hand signals for colleges, right? Like, if you have one as a school, no, we probably going to turn it down somehow.
Like, Trev, I was just going to ask you, because obviously, Trev, you're a Harvard running back here. Obviously, the Harvard-Yale game is one of the highlights of the fall every year. Does Yale have anything you guys can toss down like
that? No, we they don't. Like, we haven't gotten to the point, we haven't evolved to the point in our football programs, I guess, that we have, like, hand signals or athletic departments as a whole, unfortunately, because I would absolutely be throwing it up like every time I could.
I was going to say, man, because one of the sweetest nectars I have ever tasted is walking out of the stadium at Southern Cal and just being able to get their little peace sign here. Deal with it. Like, deal with it. That was, to me, the memory of that stadium. Winning in 2012, our undefeated year, all that good stuff about going to play in the title. Walking out of the tunnel there and hitting them with one of those.
Oh, my God.
It is a drug I wish all of you could experience with me, because there's nothing like it.
I will say, they did come right with the T-shirts leading up to Harvard-Yale week. It would be things like, nobody says I want to go to Yale when I grow up, and also yuck fail. Like, those two things, those are A1.
I do always love the academic related taunts, right? Like, Notre Dame, we always make shirts for the BC game that say backup college. Like, the academic taunts, an underrated portion
yes.
of this smack talking in here.
So, without question.
Big 12 officials, do the right thing and look the other way when someone tosses those
Let
horns
people
down.
Have fun, man, because there ain't no way you're going to be able to legislate this properly.
Nope. Legislating intent, almost never a thing that works out for the governing bodies involved. At Mike Golic Jr., at Trevor Scales on Twitter, if you somehow are one of those people that thinks tossing the horn down is an affront to sportsmanship that we cannot tolerate, please let me know so I can properly make fun of you. Coming up next, though, as we look at the NBA Finals, through four games, we are knotted at 2 apiece. Who's really in control? Next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Jhené and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.